Hey everybody, welcome to the Torg Stories podcast, April 20th edition, joined by my buddy Kent Cheesham, head basketball coach at Lagodi, Indiana, and also my former teammate. Hope you guys enjoy.
I'm going to take out Diane Court.
Diane Court doesn't go out, she's a brain.
Trapped in the body of a game show hostess.
If you're going to let him drive by, if the rest of you are going to let him catch the ball outside the 3 second lane and drive all the way in here without one guy challenging him.
Those aren't pillows.
But what we found out is that each one of us is a brain and an athlete.
And a basket case. A princess.
And a criminal. Does that answer your question?
Little maniacs like to do first?
I thought we could talk about the Panthers, Cam Newton, as a way into talking about sort of the way athletes carry themselves, whether that's changing today, and then maybe as a coach, as a teacher, and as parents, what we maybe do about that. So how much do you know about or follow Cam Newton?
I followed him a little bit. I'm a big Colts fan. And so I followed the NFL a little bit. In fact, I'm a season ticket holder. But
I was gonna ask you if you were still a season ticket holder.
I still am. I don't know how much longer. I live a little bit farther away. But yeah, Cam. I mean, gosh, what a phenomenal athlete. And I like how much he enjoys playing the game. I think if I had to be critical, is I don't know that he handles adversity very well. But that's just me.
Right. So how far from you to Lucas Oil?
Oh, it's probably, I can get in my seat from my house in 2 hours.
That's the kind of time that I like. I like from out the door into your seat. So I used to live with a guy named Mike Noska, who's a good friend of yours.
Yep.
And he must have been, I don't know, 7 to 10 hours from seat to seat.
Yes, but he's a crazy Steelers fan. I mean, he's absolutely nuts.
Does he, is he, I'm sure he still has his tickets, right?
Yes, he has tickets. In fact, he bought tickets to, season tickets to the Bengals, just so he could make sure that he would get.
Wait, he has season tickets to two different.
That doesn't surprise you, though, does it? I mean, you can't.
Well, you know, Noska, he was pretty good with money. Even when we were 25, he must be selling those season tickets then most of the time.
Yeah, he's found a way to make money off of it and see his beloved Steelers. There's no way that he would just do one. So
if the Bengals go 4-12, Noska's in trouble.
Probably not.
I mean, because I remember, you know, I don't know if you know, you knew I was a Panther fan, kind of?
Yeah, I do remember that a little bit.
And for me, I really lost my fandom. I think when I went to college, I wasn't much of a fan. And then I was even less of a fan of anything, because I was so consumed with having my team, and, you know, so I would live and die with what my team did on the weekend, and I just couldn't feel much if the Hoosiers lost or the Bears or the Colts. How do you keep up? But you've stayed a fan the whole time, right?
Well, no, I was never much of a fan. We were both players growing up, and so I wasn't a fanatic like some people live and die with their teams. And then I became a Colts season ticket holder, and I felt a little bit more like I had some ownership in the team and became more of a fan. I really like it because, for me as a coach, I don't get to just sit back and be a fan very often. And it's kind of fun to go to the games and yell and scream and on third down get loud and act like everybody else for once, criticize the coach.
That's right. What was the impulse to buy the tickets? You became a big fan, then bought the tickets, right? I mean, what made you interested in buying the tickets?
My son was starting to play a little football in second, third grade, and he liked it. And it kind of became a thing that we could do together, and it wasn't basketball. It was something different. You know, when I lived in Covington, it was only about an hour away, so it was nice. So yeah, it's a great place to watch a game. Indianapolis is.
I never been there.
No, it's beautiful.
I mean, I've been. Yeah, I haven't been in the stadium. So I didn't realize, and you may not realize, that Cam Newton and Andrew Luck are the same age. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, same age within a couple months, 1989, which makes my question even better. My question is, would you trade Luck for Newton straight up?
Well, No.
Yeah.
And that's because I think some people would. I mean, if you just look at the seasons they had this year, I mean, Luck had a horrible season for him.
He's been hurt.
He's been hurt. In fact, he just said the other day, he's still not 100%. Cam kind of struggled, but he carried his team there for a couple of years. Man, he was the best player in the league this year. So I don't know. I would say no, but I guess that's my fandom shining through, not my loyalty to my Colts.
Yeah, you know, one thing I could
trade, would you make that trade as a Panther fan?
No, I don't think I would. But let me back up. So my reintroduction to being a fan was I lived in Uptown. They call it Uptown. Have you ever been to Charlotte, North Carolina?
No, I haven't.
So Charlotte, they call downtown Uptown. So Uptown Charlotte is where everything is. And I lived in this building right in Uptown Charlotte, 6 blocks from the stadium. And I started dating my wife, Megan, and the Panthers were bad, and we could go to a game for $20. And we started just walking from our place a couple blocks and going to the games, and then that's when I became a big fan.
And yeah, then, how could you not? That's a beautiful setup.
And then it just followed me. So that was like Jake DeLome. That was Steve Smith. So, but let me get... Okay, so going to Cam a little bit more... take for example the Panthers, and I guess I'm feeling like less a Panther fan today than I did before the season started, which maybe is giving away too much. But so Cam's a big celebrator, right?
Right.
And I don't know that I have a problem with that because I used to love Steve Smith. Would like, I guess they seem more kid friendly. He would sit out and act like he was rowing a boat in the end zone,
right.
And that stuff made me laugh. I guess sometimes Cam would do the Superman pose down 18, having thrown 3 interceptions, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. He didn't do that this year. And then, you know, the Panthers...
He's never down 18 until that last game.
That's right. So, and, you know, the Panthers would do things like pose for pictures, and the game's not over. Is that stuff that bothers you? Is that stuff that you would talk to your team about? You don't care?
I think it, for me, my high school guys, that was, I want them to have fun, but I think they would really have a problem. Like you said, Cam would be celebrating after he's thrown 3 touchdowns and he's down 18 points. My guys might do the same thing if they made a 3-pointer and they're down 20 in the fourth quarter. So I just generally try not to have the celebrations. When I watched Cam and the Panthers play this year, they were fun to watch. I mean, and it was fun to watch a group of men really enjoy playing the game. So it didn't really rub me the wrong way. Probably the thing that rubbed me the wrong way was, you know, in his interview after the Super Bowl. And he may have been set up on that with the logistics of all the other interviews going on, but I just didn't like the way he handled defeat there at the end. I don't know. As a Panther fan, what do you think about?
Yeah, the thing I liked about him, his numbers wouldn't be great, but he would, when the Panthers needed a play, he would make it. So he wouldn't run all the time. But if it was 3rd and 9 and the Panthers had to have a 1st down, you know, he would bowl 3 players over or try to get the 1st down. Or he might throw a lot of balls high, but on the big play, he would make the play. And I was giving him and the team the benefit of the doubt that they were having fun playing, and I also can understand the need in 2016 to be an entertainer, or that professional athletes see themselves as entertainers more so than probably Larry Bird did. So those things, I sort of gave him the benefit of the doubt, but then the way, I guess the post-game interview stuff, the towel over the head, which Kurt, you know, Stephen Curry, he'll do the same thing. I guess especially that post-game interview, it really made me not like him as much and not feel as excited. And there's a difference between, like, what inspires me as a fan and what I'm getting excited about as a fan, as opposed to judging somebody. I don't think I'm going to judge him, and I don't think because I might carry myself in a more reserved way or I might make a big play and feel better about handing a referee a ball instead of doing a dance. I don't think my way has to be everyone's way. But when you face adversity and you're the face of the franchise and you walk out of the interview room, that's when I'm like, I just don't feel as excited about the season as I did.
Yeah, it kind of put a damper on it. I saw where they were interviewing one of his opponents right behind him in that curtain, and I think he was hearing that during that interview. So I you know, give him a little bit of a pass on it. I thought that was kind of a bad judgment by the NFL. It probably felt like to him that they were just rubbing his nose in it right after he lost the biggest game of his life.
Right.
But, you know, I got to be a Colts fan when Peyton Manning was there, and I saw Peyton Manning in similar situations many times. I mean, for a guy who had as much success as Peyton did, man, there's a lot of times that he had to really be classy after a defeat and kind of take it. And, you know, you never saw him do that. And I guess that's one of the reasons he's so beloved by so many people here in Indiana still. But Cam's young. I'm sure that his people have talked to him and things will probably get better. I mean,
so when Peyton, I was sad to see, and I'm the same way in that, like, for example, and this is all related to me. I mean, when Bob Knight went to Texas Tech and Texas Tech was red, I still felt like I was watching Indiana, and I might say Indiana by mistake watching those teams play. The same way that many fans in Indiana, I'm sure, followed the Denver Broncos very closely. What did you?
Oh, you wouldn't believe how many Broncos fans there are in Indiana right now. It'd be interesting to me over the next couple of years how many jerseys I still see being worn around here. But it was,
and that was just because their loyalty was to Peyton, and they moved on with Peyton.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I feel a little bit more like fans of people, or I'm interested in people more than I'm fans of a team. Now with Peyton, what about, like, was it Budweiser that he just relentlessly plugged getting in? What did you think of that? I thought that was terrible. It was really disappointing. Yeah.
I don't know. I've just watched so many interviews with him, and you know, you've seen him on Saturday Night Live and
right,
those commercials. He is absolutely hilarious. And I didn't think that was being a plug as much as it was him just trying to be funny. And he did say it, like, in three different interviews, but I kind of also chalked that up to Peyton's very calculated in what he says. He probably had some you know, standby answers that he was going to go through after the game, win or lose, so that he didn't make any mistakes. But
I like your take, because there's no way you can stand up there and think, if you say the word Budweiser, that somehow you and your Bennis, you're going to benefit from that. So,
if it
was sort of a tongue-in-cheek plug.
Most beer drinkers are loyal to that one brand, right?
They're loyal to Budweiser? I guess they are.
I wouldn't be, but I know a lot of people, they pick that one brand, whatever it is.
And then we don't know. You and I, we can't know what happened at Tennessee going forward as far as how much is Peyton, I don't know, how much is he a fake and how much did he get away with acting really inappropriately in college, and how much of that, you know, we don't know. You and I can't know. Is that about right?
But my gosh, I think about the stupid things I used to do and say in college. If all of those were on TV or we had social media back then, I don't know what people would think about me.
Well, I agree. I agree totally with that. Yeah, a couple things. Just the idea of having $15 million in the bank when you're 23, right?
Oh, yeah. No kidding. No, there's nobody to tell you no when you have that much money.
And I had
whatever you want to do.
And I don't know what you would say about... I had three really, really humbling experiences in my 20s, and that was not getting to play at Olivet, coaching a basketball team that went 1-20, and then being married for less than 3 years. So those three things added up to me having a lot more self-awareness about the way I behaved and the cycles I was in. And so, and I think you speak to this with Cam a little bit, you know, what if I'd have been a star in college? What if I'd have been a professional basketball player? What if I'd have had $15 million in the bank? I think it would be pretty horrific what I could have done in those years.
Yeah, and don't you think those guys, they're probably not quite as self-aware, because at the end of the day, they're going home and they still got money. They can still do whatever they want to do. It's not like, man, I'll bet there were some times where you felt like you really hit rock bottom.
Yeah,
I don't know if Ken felt that way after that. I mean, I don't know if it's a learning experience for him or not.
Yeah, I guess we'll see, right?
Yep.
So one more play from the Super Bowl, and this would be one I think I would give him a little bit of a break on. But remember the loose ball that he didn't go for? Six?
Yeah, he just fouled the fumble.
So that would you fault him for that? You wouldn't fault him for that?
I don't know. I know everybody was piling on him after that. I think a lot of times those guys are told not to do, you know, to follow that ball, those quarterbacks. And it might be something that he was just conditioned not to do. But, you know, you see Cam take all those chances. You know, you're talking about some of the runs and things that he does during the game on third down. He plays a little reckless sometimes and gets away with it. So I don't know. I don't hold that against him. I don't know.
It looked more like a impulsive move, just something that he did as a reaction to something that was coming. Almost like if you held out your hand and I took out a big axe and was going to chop your hand off and somebody faulted you for flinching. And I give him the benefit because of all the difficult physical plays he makes otherwise.
Yeah, and all year, not just one game.
For example, jumping up 10 feet into the air to try to jump over people to get a first down or get into the end zone.
Yeah.
But still, no. So even though I feel like less of a Panther fan, even though I'm frustrated with Cam, I would not trade him straight up for Andrew Luck, and you would not trade him back. That's interesting.
I think that, for me, it has to go more to my loyalty to my team.
I would say Cam is, I don't know, it's funny. Luck has been hurt, but Cam plays a style that's going to get him hurt.
Yeah, but Cam's, I mean, Bader's big, but gosh, Cam is, he's like a tight end out there. He's gigantic and athletic.
Did you see the Twitter water polo picture?
I did not see that. I heard about it.
You heard about it. So he looks very chiseled. and then you know about the... Right, and he handled that great. His response was, ha-ha, water polo sack. What's that guy's name? What's the Bronco, the great Bronco defensive player who's been franchised?
Von Miller.
Yeah, so he handled that well. Okay, I got one more... Give me a couple thoughts, whatever you want to say about Gronk. I might be leading you into a trap, but what do you think about Gronk?
I think he is unbelievably talented. I mean, people in the NFL don't have an answer for him. But he's a guy that gets hurt a lot, too. He's a little bit fragile.
Go ahead.
What he does off the field and some of his antics and things – doesn't seem to bother him on the field, unless you want to make the correlation to his health, and that maybe he's, you know, getting by a natural ability and he's not working as hard as maybe he should to stay healthy. I don't know.
So I should, this is be where I might say, sorry to bring up Mike Dask again, but you know these kinds of behaviors. I was definitely 23 or 24 years old in the Taco Bell line at 2:30 in the morning with a 9 a.m. Macker game. And I thought that I could play as well as if I would have went to bed early.
Yeah, and, you know, at that age, maybe there's not a whole lot of difference in your performance.
So do you know about the Gronk party cruise?
Yes.
So I vaguely knew about the Gronk party cruise, and I watched some video tonight before you called me. Flo Rida, do you know who that is?
Yeah, of course.
You do? I had no idea who that was. Why do you know? Because you have, because you're in touch with...
Because I have high school kids that play that music all the time. I mean,
I don't know what my... I think I'm not in an environment where the students get to show me what they listen to. I don't know.
Sometimes it's really humbling for me. When Tupac was big back in the 80s, we did this current events game in my class, and I'm reading it, and it's the first time I'd ever seen his name in print, and I pronounced it Tupac Shaker. And my kids all burst out laughing at me. And I had no idea why they were laughing at me, but then they explained it to me. But, so I get that sometimes. But, yeah, I know a lot of those,
different rap. So, I mean, I feel like I know some things. Do you know who Nas is? I think he might. I don't know how old Nas is.
Yeah.
Like, Nas is coming to St. John's, for example. He has a concert coming. It would probably be quite the education for me to go see Nas, wouldn't it? Sit up in the sit in the balcony of Carneseca. So Gronk gets up on stage and he talks about how he fell in love with Flo Rida because of the way he could drink and party, and the way he can do shots. So Flo Rida comes up and starts performing. Gronk takes his shirt off. He's doing all these dances. What's the one? Like the worm, is that what it is when you're down on? Yeah, which
down
is
on the floor.
That's more from our era. Okay.
Yeah, that's like breakdancing stuff.
So you already sort of mentioned like you're like, well, you gave your take on like, do you think that impacts his off season and his play, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree that people are a lot easier on Gronk when it comes to that than if Cam Newton would have had his party cruise and done something similar? Wouldn't that have been a disaster for Cam?
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. Why do you think that is?
Well, my simple take is because the fraternity boy party guy gets a pass where the black man does not. Is that too straightforward? Am I missing something more nuanced?
No, I think that could be it. I thought you might go there.
right.
But the thing, I don't know. Also, the thing with Gronk, he just seems more personable. Like, he's more carefree in his interviews and things like that. Cam, I think, sometimes makes me feel like he thinks he's really good and he's kind of full of himself. I could be wrong.
No, I think you make a great point there because Gronk is slapping five with people and dancing with people and buying them shots, and Cam is glaring at people or giving short answers or putting a towel over his head. And those are two very different kind of behaviors.
Right.
But I know that...
Even though they kind of act similar on the field, I don't think they act similar off the field.
Right. But they definitely... Even if Cam was smiling and buying people shots on his party boat, it would have been harder on him than they are on Gronk.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I think you're right.
And then... Yeah, I guess that's all I'll say about that. Is that all I have to say about that? Well, while we're still on, so your son, he doesn't play football anymore?
Nope. Well, in fact, he couldn't if he wanted to. We don't have football at Lagodi.
I wondered if you did. Now you got a take on concussions? Not really. You're glad you don't have to think about it or navigate it?
Yeah, I didn't really want him to play football in high school.
Was that more basketball thought than a get hurt thought, or both?
I was at a school at Covington that we didn't have a full time trainer, and there were a lot. Most of the times, we wouldn't have a trainer at our basketball games, and wouldn't have them at our football games. And I just didn't feel comfortable, with the concussion thing and the medical treatment and the attention that you might get or not get in a really physical sport like football. So I'm glad he doesn't play.
I feel like a little bit
of a hypocrite because I'll watch it every night and I'll buy season tickets, but I don't want my kid to play. I don't know. Does that make me a hypocrite?
It's close for sure. I think many of us have that gnawing more than we used to. I didn't see concussion. Did you see it?
I have not seen it yet. I would love to though.
I read the article that inspired concussion, or that concussion is based on, and it was super disturbing. And certainly I can't sit and watch a football game anymore without thinking about it. And I think you get exposed to that even more because when you're at home and there's an injury, you're watching commercials or heading to the fridge, and at the stadium you're sitting there watching somebody land there, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's scary. You really feel for those guys on the field. And when you know it's a head injury, I don't know. We kind of get conditioned to these knee injuries. Everybody can kind of come back from a knee injury, and some of those look horrific. But anymore with the head injury and the concussion thing, you see a guy go down with one of those, and You're just hoping that he gets up.
Yes. So I can't remember how to say the name of your town again.
Lagodi.
Lagodi. I don't know if my phonetic spelling on my paper here is going to help me remember that. I was looking, I don't know if I was looking at your website or what I was looking. You got to have one of the coolest gyms in the whole state.
We do have a great gym. I mean, for our size school, I mean, we got 4,500 seats. And that's kind of the cool thing about coming to Southern Indiana. There are a lot of great gyms down here.
I don't even care about size. I think it's more like seats all the way around, and they're like they're in the cement, right?
Yeah, it's an arena. It's Jack. We call it Jack Butcher Arena. It looks really the one thing, the people from Lagodi probably be mad at me. It's not a very good practice facility.
No, of course.
Because those bleachers don't move. We don't have a lot of floor space, but man, it's a great place to watch a game, and it's a great place to play a game.
So can you use six baskets in practice, or you can't do it in that gym?
We can. The side baskets, like the top of the keys, really intersect the opposing side baskets. So
yeah, right.
It's kind of hard. I had to really learn how to practice in that gym, and a lot of the shooting drills and things that I used to do and have done for years, I wasn't able to do anymore. So it was a learning experience for me.
I can tell. So you recently sent me a list of shooting drills, right?
Yep.
And I think that, the thing I think about, especially working with a lot of 10-year-old girls, is for some of them, the only time they shoot is when they're with me. And so that could mean, depending on how I organize practice, that could mean that the kid gets 8 to 12 shots per week if they're practicing with me once or twice a week. So you seem pretty conscious of getting shots up every day or most days, or the kids do that at a time outside of practice?
Both. I got a couple things. We say game shots at game spots at game speed.
Right.
So in practice, we're trying to take those type of shots that they're going to take in a game and take them as quickly as they have to take them in a game, so they get used to it. But there's some other kind of shooting that we would do also. It may be more an individual time where you work on technique and you work on form, and it's you're not shooting, as a conditioner, you're not really concerned with how many makes you get. You're worried about improving your technique. So there's two ways, but yeah, I have a manager that will sit and pick one player in a practice. We do this every week or two. I'll say, all right, hey, today you're watching so and so. I want you to count every shot he takes in practice today. And my goal is for our players to take 200 shots every practice. If they do that, then they're getting 1,000 to 1,200 shots a week just in practice. If they shoot on their own, then obviously they're going to get a lot more than that.
And you're able. How long is practice usually?
Start of the year, I mean, we go 2.5 hours, almost 3. Late in the year, then obviously we back it way down, and we're out of there in an hour, 15 minutes.
And you were able to get those shots up?
Yeah, I mean, you have to work at it, and we're counting every single shot. Drills, free throws.
Sure.
Scrimmage situation, if we're doing breakdown things, it's 3-on-3. We're counting those shots too, but we count every single shot.
I like that. It gives me something to shoot for, Kent. Thank you. did you come up with that all on your own?
I don't know. I stole that from somebody. I would love to give somebody credit for that, but I don't know who it would be. I kind of cringed a while ago when you said, your girls are always going to get 8 to 12 shots up a week.
No, well, I mean, they wouldn't really do that. We are shooting in practice, but I mean,
here's the thing. I remember you as a player, and you didn't play a whole lot of defense, but man, there's a guy that loved to shoot the ball. If there's one guy that loved to shoot the ball, it would have been Torque.
Well, like my daughter doesn't like spot. My daughter doesn't like spot shooting. I can't understand that. Like,
she can't. That's surprising.
Like, we'll do, we do this dribbling series where she's driving into cones and she's making different moves at the spot. And it's like eating dessert. What could be better? What could be better than somebody rebounding the ball for you while you're shooting up a bunch of shots?
Yeah,
So I can't understand that at all, right?
We do. Hey, we do a drill that you would love. We just call it 5-minute threes. I think some other people, we got it from Coach Beilein from Michigan. And you just have one rebounder and one shooter. The guy gets to shoot for 5 minutes and see how, he just sees how many threes he can make.
And you probably heard about the drill that seemed to get prominence on television, where you're shooting threes until you miss two in a row and then you have a number?
Yes.
Yes. Yep. That one sounded good. So what I was going to say is, like, I was standing in practice with this guy who was a wrestler. He's helping me. I know I said that really bad, didn't I?
I like the way you said wrestler.
Yeah. That was actually the main reason I sent my daughter to University of North Carolina Asheville's basketball camp was so that I could figure out who the good players on the court were, and then I tried to figure out who their parents were, and then I tried to meet them. And that's how I met this guy, who was a wrestler. But I think he was thinking, you know, we were doing these different series of time shooting drills, and girls were coming back to me and reporting scores. And I think he was kind of thinking, like, what are we doing? Because as a coach, when you're standing there, you can kind of feel like, what am I doing? The same way in the classroom, if I have 20 students and they all have a book they love, I did a lot of work to create the situation where every kid has a book they're interested in reading. But if the principal comes in and observes me, I'm just sitting there and everybody's reading. It's like, what are you doing? So I just felt like I had to justify myself, I guess. I was saying, you know, you can eat.
You're being a facilitator.
That's right. That's right. But I would go to some of my younger daughter's practices and, you know, there would be no shooting. Okay. So we went longer on that, Kent, than I meant to. So if I want to hear, I mean, my question, and you can adjust it as you'd like, is to, like, give me a couple key words or phrases that come to mind when I say Ligoti. I said it right?
Yep.
Ligoti. So, like, one of the things I would tell you about Winnemac, and you happen to have been there where I'm from in Indiana, I would bring up the horseshoe, which is what I named my second book, which is where the river goes around the park where you played in the 4-on-4 tournaments that used to be there. And I was on the cross country team, and the coach would say, run horseshoes. And so one of the things I would tell somebody about if they were like, tell me about Winnemac, would be the horseshoe. And you may need more lead time to think. What are a couple things? It's sort of like a meet Ligoti through Kent Cheesham segment. What would you say about Ligoti?
You talk about a place, and you mentioned our gym earlier. That's the thing that's really stood out for me since I've been here, is how that's just kind of the center of our town. I mean, it is, like you said, it's a beautiful facility. It seats 4,500 people. There's more seats in that gym than there are people in our town.
And you wouldn't guess, I don't think I would guess that it seats 4,500. It doesn't look huge. It's the fact that it's all the way around.
Yes, and then it has some bleachers up on top. There's the main bowl, and then on one side we have some extra bleachers that we pull out for the tournament.
Okay, I only saw that. I think I saw
it. Seats about 900 up there, but it's probably 3,500 seats, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
About 3,600 down below.
So what else? Is there another gym, or that's the only gym?
We've got a couple other gyms. There's St. John's was a Catholic school. It used to be here, and they turned it into the East Elementary. So there's a gym over there, and then there's a gym called JFK, and it was built in the 1920s, and it looks like a gym that would have been in the movie Hoosiers.
Your gym looks that way too, I think.
Does it really? Maybe the picture. I don't know. That it looks a little big.
Oh, it looks a little big, you say? It is a little big?
But yeah, it's, you know, in small-town Indiana, the high school is the center of everything. It just is. And right now we're in spring sports season, and the baseball team is kind of the big thing. And softball team, people are following them. High school sports are really big in small towns.
They are. You know, I mean, I think the big change for me was, you know, I was an assistant on that team that won the state title. I don't know if there were 10 rows on each side. Probably not 10 rows on each side, and not 200 people at those games. I mean, you know, we played Chris Paul, as I mentioned before, in the tournament, and there, you know, there probably weren't 1,000 people in the gym. That would never happen in Indiana.
No, and I think, like, I have a kid, Chandler Spring, who's playing NAIA basketball, and my daughter is playing, and so they were used to playing in gyms that had a lot of people in them in high school. you know, we played it all a bit, and there was a lot of excitement around that program. But I mean, there are a lot of places where they just don't get crowds at that level, and it's been an adjustment for them to not play in front of a bunch of people each night.
Yeah, you know, my buddy, my buddy's daughter played for Rochester High School, and they sold their gym out a couple times. But if you played for the St. John's women's team, there would be 100 people at the game, I think.
I think I hold the record. We played at Cal State Dominguez Hills over Christmas 1 year, and there were 2 people in the stands, our president and his wife. That was it. There were no cheerleaders, no nothing. There were no other fans there. That was it.
Your wife was an amazing fan. Do you want to give her props for her college fandom?
Oh, she went to Purdue University, which was about an hour and a half away from Olivet, and she came to just about every game. And in the summer, she knew that she wanted to see me, that she was going to have to be in the gym and talk about what would be better than someone rebounding for you. She rebounded for me every summer throughout college. She kind of probably led the nation in rebounding. But, yeah, she was. She was great.
So, if you're gonna, is there a place to get a sandwich or a pancake in Ligoti?
A pancake.
Like, can you go have breakfast? Can you go somewhere and order?
You can go to the lodge. I've been to the lodge several times. That's a nice restaurant, kind of family style restaurant.
And that's in the town. There is a town, and they have a restaurant.
Oh yeah, we have several restaurants. The one I like a lot is the Dairy Master.
The Dairy Master?
Dairy Master. Dairy Master is famous for its jumbo tenderloins. That's kind of funny in Indiana. Everybody is famous for their tenderloins.
I haven't had a tenderloin in 20 years.
If you come back to Indiana, any town you go to, they'll say that they have the world's best tenderloins. But the Dairy Master may be it. It may be the best. And they are busy all the time. It's kind of an ice cream slash hamburger, you know, fried food type place.
Kent, this is just what I was looking for. That makes me excited to go. I don't know if I would eat a tenderloin. We sort of don't eat pork anymore at my house. I shouldn't say that to somebody from Indiana either.
No,
are you still? Indiana. You were a very devoted golfer. Are you still playing golf?
I play zero golf now.
Wow, what happened? You just got bored with it?
A couple things. My kids got a little older, and I wasn't playing as much. And then the other thing was that I just changed our participation rules in the summer. We could start working with our teams when, you know, you and I were coaching in the beginning. We couldn't do much but open gym. So I wasn't playing as well on the course as I used to. It wasn't as fun, and I just kind of, you know, gave it up.
What are the restrictions with you working with your players now? Can you do whatever you want with them all year round?
Yeah. Not all year round, but in the summer, basically it's open game. And we can practice, we can play games against other schools, we go to tournaments and shootouts and team camps.
You can do that all summer?
We do that all through June. We hit it pretty hard in June. And then July, when we have a moratorium week, so everybody in the state of Indiana has to take the week of July 4th off. No practices, no workouts, no conditioning, no nothing. Ligoti has 2 weeks of moratorium. Instead of doing one, we do 2 in a row. So then when we get back in July, then you know, we just do open gym.
So if there was a football team, that would be a huge thing to negotiate.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was at Covington, Coach Brown, Travis Brown, is a great friend of mine. He was the football coach, and we would sit down in the spring, and we would map out what we were going to do in the summer so that our kids could go to both things. And we lifted weights together, and he was my JV coach, and so it worked out really well. And, you know, there are a lot of places.
Because he hoped you would win basketball games.
Right, and I wanted him to win football.
That's not always the case.
I mean, we're the same players. We're on both teams. So.
Right.
You get in some schools that's not like that. I mean, it's cutthroat. They're fighting for players and they want them to specialize. I've been kind of lucky that I never had to deal with that.
Does your ability to work with your players cut into the AAU play, or that's not something that happens with your players as much?
I only have one kid right now that's playing AAU. I've had several in the past. You know, they can get a lot done without playing AAU. I think AAU should be a time where you get exposure if you want to play college basketball. So, you know, growing up and playing a bunch of extra games in the spring, not a big deal, unless you want college coaches to see you. We do so much as a team, and we practice in the summer, and we play games against other schools. We're still getting that extra experience.
I won't go too much longer on this, but I'm curious. So if you could you take your team and enter a tournament where there's all these made-up AAU teams and there's Ligoti, could you do that or you can't do something like that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Wow, that's a huge change.
I had my teams at Covington the last couple of years were really good. What was fun was we would go and play all the big schools. I mean, we played Plainfield and Maryville and Drain and all these big schools. We played, you know, that wouldn't schedule us during the season, and it was a lot of fun for our guys to compete and succeed against a lot of those big schools.
Yeah, that sounds fun. And so, but that also, you get paid the same, and you got a lot more work to do.
Yeah, you're right.
No, I mean, but in that kind of the...
It's fun. I don't look at it as work. It's so much fun to be with your team and coach in the summer. You're not really getting paid for it. At Ligoti, I get so many hours. They pay me for 40 hours of supervision, an hourly rate for the summer, which doesn't come close to how many hours I spend, but it's a little something. But most schools don't do that. Yeah, you're doing it for free.
Is that? I guess it's not quite the same as the objection to Harbaugh at Michigan coming to Florida and having his camp. The objection really was the invasion of the recruiting territory, not so much having to work more. Is that true or not quite true?
I don't know. What do you think? I think it was the fact that they didn't want Harbaugh down there recruiting their players.
Harbaugh, I mean, so there's somebody I'm a fan, I'm super interested. I mean, when he says, you know that line when he says, I'm a jackhammer? Like, it's just like, I'm all football. You know, he just doesn't.
Yeah.
So when you're like a human being who wants to speak to your wife and go out with your kids once in a while, and you have to compete against somebody who calls himself a jackhammer and wears the same pants so he doesn't waste time picking them out in the morning. I mean, that's so hard to compete with, right?
Exactly. I love it because he doesn't apologize for the way he is. He's just the way he is, and you know what you're going to get with him.
Yeah, I don't have anything negative to say about him. I find him really entertaining.
Oh, I was excited. When there was some talk about him possibly coming to the Colts, I thought that would be great. I would love to have him down here.
Everybody would love to have him, wouldn't they? Except for one place, San Francisco.
Yeah, evidently they got tired of it.
So I got a bunch of questions, but I'll go to this one. You were building a house. You're in a house.
Yeah, we just moved in a new house.
So let's hear about that. I know. Is this the first house you ever built?
No, it's the second.
You met with an architect, or I mean, was it specific to you? Was it like from a book of models? I don't know anything about something like that.
We went through so many plans online. You can just get on the internet now and find plans. We finally found one that we both liked, my wife and I. Then we had a guy here in Ligoti, an Amish guy, draw up the plans, and found a builder that lived near us, and they built the house. I mean,
so if I were going to turn this into, here's a couple things you should watch out for if you're going to build a house, what would you say from your two builds?
I was really lucky. Both times I worked with really good builders. Matt Smith was a high school went to the same high school I went to at Clinton Prairie, and so he was a builder, and he took care of everything and took care of us. And I got really lucky. There's a guy by the name of Ed Wagler here who's a really good builder, and he lived about half a mile from me at the new lot where we built, and met him, and he knows. Gosh, it's kind of cool. Down here, there's a really big Amish influence, and there are a lot of builders, a lot of quality craftsmen down here. So they can put stuff up quick. They didn't break ground on my house until like right after January 1st, and here it is, you know, first part of April, and we're in our house. So it's kind of cool to see how fast it went up.
And that's exciting.
Yeah, it is. We built on the lake. There's a lake just north of town here called West Boggs Lake.
What's it called?
West Boggs Lake.
Okay.
It's not a big lake. It's big enough that you can ski and tube on a little bit or do a little fishing, but it's not gigantic by any means. It's kind of cool. We got a great view. I went out and fished last night off my neighbor's dock for about 45 minutes and caught 20 fish.
Wow.
I like to, still dance out there.
You can clean them?
I didn't keep them. I just threw them back.
Yeah. I mean, he used to fish and we used to clean them. I don't think I cleaned them. I think I stood there and I was 10. I feel more like doing that today than I ever have in my life. I don't know if Dad would still show
the
me.
Clean them part? Would you clean them now?
I don't know. That's what so trout are big in Asheville. You know, you go to the mountain stream and you catch the trout and you clean it. That seems like a great thing to do. Right. You're saying I shouldn't clean them. I should just get somebody else to clean them. I should buy them. I don't know.
No, I'm not telling you what to do. I love fishing.
Yeah.
And I've seen guys clean them, but I don't know, man, if I could do that or not. People around Laguardia make fun of me. I'll have to clean fish. I'm going to have to learn how to do it.
Because it's an art and you're not sure you could learn it, or because you would be grossed? You wouldn't be grossed out by cleaning?
Yeah, I kind of get grossed out by
it. Oh, that's where you were heading with that. All right. I wouldn't be grossed out at all, I don't think. I think I would if I cleaned a squirrel or a cow.
Oh, hunting's bigger out here. I mean, we got deer hunters. They hunt all the time. And I don't have a problem with, like, shooting a deer, but if I had to go get one and clean one, I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to shoot any deer. I haven't shot any deer. Here's one thing I like. You use the phrase down here. So, when I'm in New York, as I am today, you know, you're 800 miles to the west, mostly, a little bit south. And then when I'm in Asheville, you're saying down here, and I'm like 600 miles south of you.
I guess when I say down here, I'm thinking southern Indiana. I've not lived this far south.
Right. Your home base is the Clinton Prairie area.
I guess. Someone said, hey, you know, we've gone back to, you know, the Frankfort Clinton Prairie area to visit and other places. Hey, you going back home? And I don't consider any place home but Laguardia. I think wherever I live is home. But I still say down here, so I don't know.
Yeah, if somebody said, where are you from, you would say Laguardia?
Yeah.
Where were you? And then I guess. Where am I? You know, when they said, somebody asked me.
Yeah, where do you stay?
I have total confusion. I feel without a home. I don't feel connected to, so I guess if I feel anywhere connected to any place geographically, it's Winnemac. And even that's interesting because I only lived there for 6 years of my 46 years of life.
I thought you grew up there.
My mom and dad were born there, and both my grandparents were there. I was born in Logansport, 30 miles to the south. We didn't move to Winnemac until I was in the eighth grade. I guess maybe it's graduating from high school. It's also doing a lot of writing about it. I was counting up. I mean, I've lived in 26 different places. I counted it up today. Last night I counted it up.
Goodness, 26.
So I have, I kind of feel a little bit, I guess my roots are my wife and my kids and, that's it. And I know it's like what you're saying a little bit. So it's not, I'm a Midwesterner. You know what? I think you would feel more like a Midwesterner if you lived in New York City or you lived in the South or you lived in California. Like to be a Colts fan with you, you're surrounded by 60,000 Colts fans. But if you were, you know, if you were a Colts fan in Memphis, it would be different, I think.
Oh, yeah. You just have to stand up for yourself a little bit, I would think.
So that'll take me, we're getting there toward the end, Ken. But
yeah.
I don't know which thing to talk about you. So on the one hand, I feel like you need a southern tour of cities. But I don't know. Have you been anywhere in the South? And if not, like, where have you been in the United States that you like? And then let me try to sell you on some southern things.
Like where would I like to live if I didn't live here?
I mean, like, have you been to San Francisco?
No, I haven't been.
Have you been to L.A.?
Been to L.A.
Okay, what did you do there? Why did you go there?
I went there when I played with the basketball team in college.
So have you taken any non-basketball trips outside of the state, outside of the Midwest? Let's start with that.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I've been to Vegas several times.
Right.
I could live in Vegas.
You could?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
How? What do you, because you like gambling? Because you like it 110 degrees?
I just like the excitement there. It's kind of, I mean, I think about it. Is there any place that's more different than small town Indiana than Las Vegas?
Right. I would like for you to give New York a chance on that question, probably.
My wife's been to New York, and she just, she thought it was great. Gosh, I don't know. It's so big.
I mean, when I do stuff in Queens, I mean, it probably because we talked recently. I was thinking about, like, what would I take Kent to do here? And I think it would be fun to show you, like, just more city Queens than, say, you know, go to the Empire State Building, which, of course, you would do some of that stuff if you came here. But it would be fun to just show you, like, no, this is...
I was like to live there.
I mean, like, you go...
You probably walk a lot more places than I do.
So, well, I don't have a car. So...
Yes.
But I mean, I do something that not many New Yorkers do, which is I walk 40 minutes to St. John's in the morning. It's like 2.5 miles, I suppose. Which I just do stuff like that because I like... The average New Yorker wouldn't do that. They would ride the bus, which is about the same time because it stops. Like, here would be something that... This is the exact moment that I thought of you. So I have this run that's about 25 minutes until I get to this park called Forest Hills Park. And there's a public track with, like, AstroTurf. And so probably on the track are 600 people. Not 600 people running, but 600 people playing soccer, having picnics, playing music, doing pull-ups on the pull-up bar. You know, and probably over 50 different cultures represented. So it would be fun for me to, like, go on a run with you where you're running around this track and you're just like, I can't believe I'm seeing this because it's so not Lagodi, right?
Yeah, because we are absolutely not culturally diverse here.
And you also, you don't have so many people packed into a little space.
No.
You know, you're talking about 3 or 4 million people packed into, like, a 4 by 4 mile area.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, you have areas where there's no one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can go and, you know.
So that part is really
different. Nobody within a square mile of you.
So how about...
Not here, easy.
Here's some towns. Savannah, Nashville, Miami, Charleston. Some of my favorite towns. Have you been to any of those towns?
I've been to Nashville. I've been to Charleston. It's been a while.
So you've been around a little.
I've been around a little bit. I'm not generally a huge traveler. I kind of like to hang out here. My wife gets on me because she would like to travel more. But
yeah, see,
I've been to Texas, been to Florida, been, you know, moving around. We go out, been to Virginia on vacation, places like that, but not, you know.
Here's the problem in my relationship.
I think going on vacation to places and then being like you living in 26 different places is completely different. You really get an essence of the places that you're talking about because you've lived in them.
Yeah, I don't like... I'm tended to say I don't like to go on vacation. I mean, the thing I would say, which sounds like I'm making a joke, but I'm not, but I would kind of say something like, if you wanted to experience it, why don't you just go live there for a while? I mean, that would be the kind of thing I would say. But the problem we have now... is my wife spends the whole year. She now teaches. She teaches about a quarter mile from where she graduated from high school, and she probably teaches about 800 yards from our house. And that's where my kids go.
Does she walk to school like you do?
She doesn't because she's got. Right. I won't explain why she doesn't. I think it's because she's got a lot of junk. She's got two kids and a big bag of teaching materials. But in other words, she'd like to go do something and leave town and go somewhere once in a while. Where I'm so happy when I'm home. You know, I've flown.
You leave to work. You travel extensively just to get to your job.
I've flown from North Carolina and back 3 weeks in a row now.
Oh my goodness.
Let me end with a happy JetBlue customer service story. Are you ready?
Okay.
So sometimes the world stomps on you when you're down, right?
Exactly. It seems like they pile on.
Yes. And New York is a pretty aggressive, can be a pretty aggressive, nasty place. All the stories start coming. I won't go to the bad stories. I'll stick with the good story. So I get off the plane last night. I ride what's called the air train from JFK Airport to Central Queens. I'm on the air train, and I get a text. And it's from the pilot of the JetBlue plane who found my planner and my Kindle. And so he, because my phone number was in my planner. And he's like, hey, I have your planner. And he wants to meet me somewhere to give me back my planner and my notebook. But I am on the train. I have to get off the train and get on a different train and go back to the airport. So he leaves it with somebody. So the pilot, the JetBlue pilot, hooked me up with my Kindle by texting me and taking it to a place where I could pick it up.
That seems like something a Midwesterner would do.
That's right. And his name was Brian Gambino, so I don't think he was a Midwesterner.
No.
He goes.
I don't like it.
He said, this is Brian. I was your pilot. And I said, and then I texted him, Gambino, right? Because I wanted to give him some, I wanted to write customer service and tell him what he did. And he was like, you have a good memory. And I was thinking, like, you can't remember the name Gambino? Like, you know, when he introduced himself and said Brian Gambino, that gets your attention, I think.
Yeah, I think that's an easy name.
All right, Ken, I think we kicked butt tonight.
All right, well, it was fun.
All right, you have a good night, and I'll send you the stuff to spread the word on our conversation.
All right, sounds great.
All right, good night.
All right, thanks.
105.99, 18.7 seconds left. Miller for three, and he got it. Reggie Miller with a clutch tray, and it's 105-102. And a steal. Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again. Reggie Miller has tied the game with 13 seconds remaining. Reggie Miller made a three, stole the ball, raced behind the three-point line, and hit again.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.